We are going to attempt to answer your questions and impress you.
The word darshan is an Indian word, and from what I understand, the meaning is to sit in the presence of the master and just drink in his loving vibrations. The master just sits there, and everybody just sits there, and this special energy transpires. That's what they do in India. But in the West, if you just all sat there and I sat here and we closed our eyes, it's a bit boring. So we answer questions to entertain you and to entertain ourselves.
I went before Osho, a master, in 1976. Some of you were not born, that's okay. And I was breaking up with my girlfriend. And I go before him in his darshan. And basically what I was saying, Osho, you take her, she's driving me crazy. That's basically what I was doing. So we both go, and he says, don't worry, I'll take care of her. And I was so relieved. And then he said, he tells me this story. He said, in the beginning, God created man. Now I'm listening. And he said, and then after 7 days, man was bored. So he asked God for a woman. So God granted man a woman. And then after 7 more days, the woman was driving man crazy, so the man said to God, please take her back. 7 more days, and man is bored, and he says to God, please give me the woman back. And it goes back and forth. And then he looks at me, Osho, and he says, you can't live with a woman, and you can't live without a woman. And I'm listening, and I'm waiting for the answer, and he just left me like that. And that was a darshan. I walked on, I said, what? What is he talking about? Man, I can't live with a woman, and it's true when I look at it.
Okay. We are going to answer some questions. And in between, so that you don't fall asleep or get bored, I will be asking you to do certain things, such as an example would be you go to someone and you look into his eyes and you say, I need love, not pain. Some personal affirmation. The other person will say, I need love, not pain. And then you shake hands or you hug, depending on how advanced you are. And I will be asking you to do certain things like that, so that, you know, you just don't sit there and don't know what to do.
The first question is from Richard.
Richard.
Who's Richard?
Richard. Yeah. Yo, Richard, all right.
I have no questions. But in thinking, I have doubts which gave me a complex. How can I accept then that I have no questions and just live?
Richard.
Richard, from what I know, it's very difficult to sit there and do nothing and accept existence. You know, things come, they go, without questions.
There's a story. This enlightened master
is in tune with the universe, has no questions. He's dressed all in white, and he's walking, and the sun is beautiful, and the wind is soft, the trees, it's all ideal. He has no questions. And he's walking, and a bird comes by and shits all over him. He has no questions, but he looks up, and inside he wants to say, "I'm gonna fucking kill you," you know, but he can't say that because it doesn't look good. He's a master, you know what I mean? We all have questions, and it's it's a way of communicating. It's a way of saying, "Hey, how are you? How's it going?" You know, and I would sit in front of Osho for about 15 minutes and he'd give me this great answer, and I would be like, "Wow, wow, wow." And then afterwards, I'd say to my friends, "What did he say?" I was so gone with his answers, you know? But it was just the connection that was more important than the answer. He has no questions. Maybe later on, you'll get one, all right? Now feel free to ask. Okay? Or else I'm going to be standing there and nothing to do, okay?
Yeah.
All right? All right. Here's what I want to say to you personally. I grew up in New York City, multiracial section, and the rule was, if you're white, you're all right. If you're brown, hang around. But if you're black, stand back. And that's what's the rule. And I used to hang out with black people. And they used to put each other down. They could call each other nigger, but not a white person couldn't do that, you know? And one of the worst things they would call each other was an Oreo cookie. An Oreo cookie is chocolate on the outside and white on the inside, smiling, trying to get approval from everybody, you know? And I've worked with black groups, and there are different levels. There's high yellow, and it goes all the way down to black, black. And they discriminate with each other, you know? If you're really black, black, you're down there. But if you're high yellow, you're up there, you know? And what I want to tell you is, you don't ever have to sell yourself out. You don't ever have to grin and eat shit for anybody. Don't ever do that. People don't like you the way you are, your color the way you are, too bad, you know? That's what I learned. The worst thing you could do is smile to please the other to get accepted. That's not what life is about. Follow your heart. People don't like your color, fuck them. It's an enlightened master talking. Okay?
Okay, do we have a question from Kabir?
Yep.
Kabir.
I would like to know if everything which happens to us is because it's the mirror.
Everything that happens to us, if it is a mirror of us.
I believe in the end, it's always you. In the end, it's always you. What's happening? But you have to accept that what's happening to you also is a big influence, you know, on you. Even though it didn't originate with you, you know. My psychologist will explain this.
Things that are happening to you, they can be outside of you and they cannot be directly be related to you, but the way you respond to them, that is your mirroring. And in that way, every situation will be a teacher to you. Sometimes we call this our judgment and we say, oh, this is very bad, it should not happen to us. This is very good. This is really what we deserve to happen. But the important thing is how you are responding in a situation. Are you responding always with the same pattern? That is automatic. Somebody can push a trigger on you and there you go again. You don't want to respond like that, but the conditioning is so strong that you get angry, you get irritated, you know, it's like you react. The art is that you can see a situation and you can say, okay, this is the way it is appropriate to respond, and that gives you the clear mirror. In that way you have a mirror, because every situation asks you, who am I? What do I want to give in that moment? How do I want to respond? How can I create the situation so that it is becoming a more beautiful situation?
The law of attraction is not 100% always.
I think the law of attraction only works if you are conscious with the attraction. You know, it's like, it's not just like there is a law of attraction and you can act however you want to act. You need to bring awareness to it. You need to be conscious how you want to respond. Without you, it is not just that there is a fantastic attraction and by miracle and magic it's going to happen. You have a major part in it. You understand?
But my unconscious is, I attract things to get conscious what I am, of the things which are in the dark.
Yeah, and your work is to make it conscious. You have to do the work. It is not just that there is a law that will do it for you. Without your awareness, without your conscious effort, where are you?
When I'm ill, for instance, if I feel this is my own problem, because I'm not conscious of something.
I don't know. There is definitely ways that, you know, you can make, there's like a whole psychosomatic area where it's very clear, like you're repressing emotions, it can make you sick because you're not listening to yourself. But there is also many reports where there are situations that you suddenly get very sick and the illness actually teaches you a lot about life, about your attitude, about who you are. It's not that illness is just a bad thing. It can also really teach you that maybe you think with your mind you can do everything good, but it is not like that. It doesn't follow like that.
Thank you.
There was a man, his name was Jeff Love, and he invented the Enlightenment Intensive. It's a group process where one person sits in front of the other person and they ask you these questions like, who are you? And then you always have to come up with something new, you know. And I remember about a half hour into the process, they kept asking me, who am I? I had to come up with another answer. And then at one point, I said, I am the look that says, if you ask me that question again, I'm going to beat the shit out of you. And I was really upset. And then he goes to the leader, and the leader comes back to me and says, we can't do that. This is not an encounter. They're just asking you a question. Who am I? And then I start to say, I am love. I am God. I was going, I am over and over and over and over. I am my mother. I am my father. I am existence. I am. And then at some point I got it. I am without the object was enough. So I ended up saying, who are you? I am. Not I am something. I am. And that took a long time. You wouldn't believe to get to that point. And then I kept saying, what is another? What is another?
I don't know what another is. You know, what is another? Another is probably the projection of me. And I went on and on and on and on. And finally, I enjoyed saying, I am. And then I realized, I am is too much. Then, as who are you? Then I ended up saying, I. Not, I am love. I am I. And I really enjoyed that one. That was 2 days later. I. Finally, it goes on and on and on. And then I got it. To answer who I am does not involve words. If it involves words, it's your mind. So finally I got it. The person, who are you? And I was going, ah! And I'm rolling all over the floor. And then the leader came over and he just said, very good. He understood. There was no words, it was just laughter. You know, how could I describe myself? You know? It was just giggle, giggle, giggle. Answer to your question from the outside and all of that, you know. In the end, there's no words, it's just with no words, just appreciation. I don't know how else to put it. Just DPS inside without words. That's what I discovered.
Thank you.
So this question is from Kabir.
Kabir.
Dear Girish, recently I was listening to the personal darshan you have had with Osho. You were talking about the three major fears coming up in your group therapies. The fear of dying, of going mad, and the fear of sexual orgasm. I'm not afraid to die. I'm happy to be alive, but when the time comes, I will welcome my death with a hokahe. I'm not afraid of going mad, Lord. The fear left in my life is the fear of sexual orgasm. Being with you in the Human University is certainly the best place to overcome this fear. Do you have any further advice? With love and gratitude, Kabir.
Deep meditation question. Kabir, if you are not the body, who are you? That's deep stuff, man. If you're not the body, you can't. If I'm not this, if I'm not that, if I'm not the body, who am I? That's a good one. And that'll be an exploration for you at the Human Universe. No objects. No externals. Yeah. Who am I? And I think you go into this Gaga space where there's no answer, there's no words. It's just a big appreciation. On record, the oldest man to have a baby was 94 years old. So don't worry so much about orgasm. You got plenty of time, man. Don't concentrate just on this. Try to get a whole thing going. A friend of mine called E.O. Bach said that the heart is a pump with lots of tubes. You know? If you take a man's dick and you turn it, without breaking it, turn it, there's a perfect shape of a heart. And then I remember asking, but what about women? And I could understand a man goes like that and says, oh, that's a perfect shape of a heart. Yeah. What? And he said women have to figure that one out because he wasn't a woman. Yeah. But he understood what a man, where the heart of a man comes from. And all men know that. If you take a dick and you look at it, it's a perfect shape of a heart. Right? Women get a bit jealous behind that, and they say, well, what about, where's the heart for me? And Shankrika has an answer.
Well, I don't know this one. I mean, you can argue that women have a clitoris, women have prostate. which they actually only found out now. Up till now, it was always in the medicinal world that men have a prostate, but women don't have a prostate. And apparently women have a G-spot, and the G-spot is actually on the female prostate. And it has the shape of a heart. So they say. So, why not?
You know?
Yes,
Somebody know? Oh, yeah. Female. Yes, females have to know. Yeah.
No, I think the thought is a little bit strange for me. This thought, looking at the anatomy. It's a little bit strange for me. Because we have a heart in our body, and we have a spiritual heart, and I don't have to search it in my body.
Okay. It's more like the form, the symbol.
Yes, yes.
Do you know that the Pope has his funny shaped hat? And you know what?
Yes.
If you look at it, it's the shape of a dick. I'm a Catholic, so I can say it. Yeah. You know the minarets?
Yes, okay.
Yeah, but they're all symbolisms all over the world. All religions have them. Mm-hmm. You go to Thailand and you see these incredible things that all point to the sky. You wonder where that all comes from. To be heart full. Your heart is full. Now you can say spiritually my heart is full, but to be heart full means that you got a stiff dick.
I don't understand. Okay,
to be heartless. It's symbolism. For instance, all, this is according to the Bach, he's a friend of mine in Helsinki. All words that begin with E, E is a symbol down here, E. Ejaculation, elongation, E-masturbation. You know, it's all the E's have to do with the genitals, erection, you know. Again, according, this is heathen mythology, they say very little about women, you know. According to heathen mythology, a child by the age of 7 could put both his legs over here, and he could do the ring. He could suck himself off, and then he would get a ring. And that's where the original ring comes from. You being able to put your legs here. And then I asked Sabak, what about women? What do women do? He said they use straws. And everything seemed to be centered around sperm and God. And okay, we'll leave it like that. Okay. The three-ring circus. Three-ring circus, the center circus was fire in the beginning of time. Women lived in one circle, men lived in the other circle, and when they wanted to get together, they would go to the fire circle in the center. They would make love, but then always they would go back, the men would go back to the men's circle, and women would go back to the women's circle. This was a heathen mythology. At the age of 7, all the children would live with the women. At the age of 7, the men would then go to the men's circle and learn how to be men, and women would learn how to be women. And you see it today in the three-ring circus, and you don't know where it comes from, and it goes all the way back to heathen mythology of how to be a man, how to be a woman. Very fascinating stories. I do a lot of work in therapy, and what happens often is the denial this word denial, no, denial, denial of reality. That's the basis of mental illness. And then they have all kinds of definitions for it, but that's the basis. Denial. I don't want to be here, I'm going to be over there. I don't want to be here, I'd rather be Napoleon. I don't want to be here, I'd rather go into a fantasy world. Denial. Denial of reality is the basis. And what I do in my work often is trying to get people grounded. Instead of denying themselves, if you grow up and you swallow a lot of no's, it's called denial. After a while, you have different ways of acting it out. And I had to go something very fundamental, a position in life. I need love, not pain. Too much pain kills the organism. You die. You need love, nourishment. Not drugs, alcohol, criminality, reactions. I want you to stand up, go to three people, hold hands, and say, I need love, not pain.
I need love, not pain.
You can either shake hands or hug. It's up to you. And you establish this position. I need love, not pain. Go to three different people and exchange of
hands. I need love, not pain.
I need love, no pain.
So hopefully when you go to sleep tonight, this statement will be in your brain. I need love, not pain.
That makes sense. It makes sense. I don't need pain. And this simple self-affirmation, hopefully, will enlighten your life. What is love? For me, it's a good feeling. Pizza! I hear pizza and I smile. I see a friend and I haven't seen him in a long time. And my heart just goes. It's a good feeling. And of course, there's bad feelings, you know, but it starts with a good feeling for me. Going back to my friend Nabok, who came up with all these about the heart things, he said the word love. In heathen times, they used to, everything was read backwards. So, evil. What does evil mean? Evil, like
choice.
You cross the border and there's a ball. So originally, love meant selection of the genitals. How about that one? I select your genitals. Evil. Instead of love. Read it backwards. This is according to the Bach. This is, I didn't say this, you know. It's a good feeling. And then more than that, you can, but it starts that way for me. Like, I like to say pizza because immediately I love pizza, so I get a good feeling. unless you want a more deeper.
Yes, I just said to Viraj, he often says you can use the word enlightenment, but actually he prefers the word enlovement, meaning that if your heart is opening up, then your whole body, your whole system, your whole being will start to radiate. And that is actually the love is like the battery of your being. Enlightenment is often sort of like something that happens up here in your mind. Enlovement is more something that happens in with your whole being.
Sure.
If you compare Jesus with Buddha and with Muhammad.
Yes.
You.
If I compare Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad.
Also, what do you think they have in common and what is the difference?
Can I ask you
practically? Go for it.
Paresh, I would like to know if you I would like to hear you talking about unworthiness, if you like.
What?
Unworthiness.
Unworthiness.
Unworthiness, yeah. Because I feel like I want to get free in this life, free of emotional things, of mind things, and live from my heart. But I see unworthiness comes back like an old demon here and there, and it doesn't allow me to really free up because it creates fear in me sometimes. It creates like an emotional thing inside of me where, especially when I have to make some decisions in my life to go further or to risk something, and then this kind of demons of unworthiness come back, and I know they are grounded from the childhood, but I would like if you have to say something about it.
Well, you wasn't born with a gene that says you're unworthy. You learned this from the outside.
Unworthiness has, I have to translate it.
Okay.
Unwert.
Generally, your parents make you feel you're okay or you're not okay, you're worthy, you're not okay, not worthy. And getting people back to your original position, you're okay. It's a simple way of putting it. Because if not, whatever you do, you feel unworthy, you've already put yourself down, you've condemned yourself. And changing that around and starting here and now and saying, hey, no matter what has happened to me in my history and the future hasn't come, I choose to take the position that I am worthy. Because if not, it's not healthy. It's not good. It destroys you in the end.
Right.
Own it. Own a new position. I'm okay. I've done a lot of things that I don't like in my past. And a lot of things have happened to me. But today, right now, I'm okay. And that's how it has to begin. Because if you try to go into all of it, you'll be there for years.
Right. This is
drives you nuts. So start now.
Yeah.
I'm okay. And I don't have to pay a price. Just the way I am is enough.
What do you mean by pay a price?
To please other people. Other people have expectations. Jump, you know, sit, walk, don't walk, you know. All these expectations drive you crazy, you know. You don't have to pay a price. The only expectation that you have to fulfill are the ones that you have for yourself. Not for your boss, you know, society, religion, whatever. And that's a big one.
It is.
This sense of worthiness. Yeah, that's important. where you can look in the mirror and say, I'm okay. A lot of things happen. I did a lot of things, but today I'm okay. I don't have to pay a price to be loved. Just where I am is enough. And that's a big one. Just the way I am right now is enough. You have to own that. Maybe tomorrow you could become president or whatever, you know? But just the way I am right now is enough. Own that. Everybody stand up and exchange that with each other. Just the way I am right now is enough.
Just the way I am right now is enough.
It's enough, man. It's enough.
You too, man. Huh? Yeah. Well, I really need to take a motion, isn't it?
Just the way I am right now is enough. So wie ich im Moment bin, ist es absolut okay.
So wie ich jetzt bin, ist es absolut okay.
Okay, when you finish, can you
please sit down again? People at the university, parents are always an issue because they're the original ones that gave you an identity. You know, they looked at you and they say, a boy, yay, a boy, a girl, oh, girl. You know, your parents are your main role models for who you are. I have groups, and in the groups, you see people punching pillows saying, my mother wasn't there when I was small. My father didn't treat me right. And all this blame and reactions towards your parents. I remember telling a group, I could see you all punching in the pillows, being angry, sharing all your reactions towards your parents. But did you know if we had just parents in this group, parents would have a right to punch pillows too and say, my children, they drive me fucking crazy. You know? And I said, look at the other side. We blame our parents, but guess what? Parents are human beings too. You know? They try in their way to give you what they thought was best. And it was never the right way, you know? My father's Filipino, and his position was, I speak, you listen. That was it. My conversation, my thoughts, had nothing to do with anything. He spoke, and that's the way he raised me. I use this example. We would sit in a park together. We wouldn't say anything. We'd just sit there. And then this beautiful woman would come walking by, and as she passed us, he'd go, boom, boom, you hit me, boom, boom. And that was a whole conversation. It was a whole conversation like, isn't she a beautiful woman and I like her? But he wouldn't say anything. I would have to assume that what he was saying. And that was just his way. What I got out of that is with my own son, we talk about everything.
And it might be the most ridiculous thing. I don't care. We just talk, talk, talk. And I missed it with my father, but I'm making up with it with my son. We blame our parents because they didn't do it right. You know, they should have done it right. And there's primal scream, mama, 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 daddy, 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 I hate you, mama. And at some point, you have to grow up. And you got to be able to say, I thank my parents for giving me what they could in their way, not my way, in their way. That's a growing up period, you know? It's called forgiveness. One of the worst emotions that you can hold on to is called resentment. Resentment is anger, but you don't share it. You just say, but you don't share resentment. That goes inside of you. It kills you eventually, the cells. Resentment. You have negative feelings, but you don't share it. You think about it, you might say a little bit, but you don't let it go.
I was doing some work in AccuEnergetics. It's a system. And they said, are there any... They were telling me... They told me a story.
The director told me a story. He said, two women came to see him separately. They didn't know each other. And they both had similar histories. They didn't know each other. And what ended up happening is that they both were in a concentration camp, both their families were killed, they were used as sex slaves, and they managed to survive. One woman said, the director said, can you forgive? Because if you don't forgive, this is going to destroy you. And she says, I can. I could forgive the guards. It's difficult, but I'll let it go. Another woman said, no. I'll never forgive them for what they did to me. They killed my family, they killed everyone, and I won't let it go. This resentment was there. She ended up dying of cancer. It was destroying her inside. She wouldn't let it go. The other woman who got married, has kids. That's how resentment works. You swallow these no's, and you don't share it, and then in your body, it just starts to eat itself up. We blame our parents because they didn't do it perfectly. We are resentful. And I spent a lot of time trying to get people to say, hey, they tried. What can you do? You know, it was their trip. They tried and they did it their way.
Rich. Would you speak of the resentment then to the person you have resentments to? I mean, my mother is dead now, and
yes,
I still...
Yeah, but you could write a letter.
That's true.
And then at the end, you could burn it. And,
right.
You know,
but usually you wouldn't go to a person and speak of the resentment.
In a group situation, you can.
You can, but not...
Outside the group situation, it would be very insensitive. People couldn't handle
right.
it.
Right.
Yeah, you have to be sensitive. Say, you hurt me, and I just need to share this with you. I don't want you to feel put down by it. You know, you can explain it, yeah?
So that is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still inside of you, so it's, you're writing to yourself and it's your parents. Yeah. I forgive my parents for not being perfect. If you can do that, it's kind of like you grow up. All right? Everybody stand up and exchange those words.
I forgive my parents for not being perfect. Okay, one minute. I can get some sort of problem.
I'm finished. Who started it?
There was a night master, his name was Gurdjieff. And in his workshop, there was a sign. And the sign said, you can tell how far a man has come in his life by how much he loves his parents. And he wouldn't work with you unless you loved your parents. That was one of the requirements. That was something basic. And then he could take you to a higher level. And you see people come into groups, and it's really this conflict, blame, hate, resentment towards parents. And they get stuck with this. And this guy, they never grow up. They're always reacting. They're like adolescent teenagers, and still they're blaming their parents. And they haven't said, it's enough now. I give it up. I don't want to blame them anymore. This exercise of forgiving your parents, it ends up with you forgiving yourself for not being perfect. Because that's the bottom line. You know, your parents are on the outside, right? If you can forgive them, you can go to another step, a deeper step, the final step. I forgive myself for not being perfect. I feel guilty that I didn't do it correctly. I'm not the ideal parent. I'm not the ideal husband. I'm not the ideal, you know, I forgive myself for not being perfect. That's the bottom line. That's why it's important to be able to forgive your parents. A little brainwashing, everybody will stand up and say, I forgive myself for not being perfect. The bottom line, everybody up.
I forgive myself for not being perfect.
And hug.
When they ask the question. Okay, Martin.
You want to make a...
Forgive me,
Okay, we have one question from Dear Viresh, my question I want to ask you is about my working situation at the university. Since a few years, with the change of management, I'm not anymore working in a surrounding of support, teamwork, and friendship, but one of top to down, control, and mistrust. It seems like I still have to learn something out of it. Also, I'm dependent from it as it is my financial income. How can I deal with this situation in a heartful and friendly way? Love.
Well,
I'll share with you what happened to me. I was working in a psychiatric hospital. I had my own ward. And I spent 2 years to get this job, preparing, going to the Ministry of Health, the directors of the hospital. I'm not a doctor, so for them to accept me as a specialist, 2 years, I get the job. After 2 years on the job, I'm not able to work the way I want to work. I get called to the financial administration office, for example. They say, how come you don't punch in with a card? This was at that time. You use a card to punch in. I said, because I don't work like everybody else. They said, what do you mean? I said, I work late. They said, you still have to punch in. That weekend, I'm doing a marathon group at the hospital. I come in at Friday morning, and I punch out Tuesday evening because I'm staying there. They call me and, how come you haven't punched out or punched in? I said, I've been working all this time. They couldn't understand it, you know. It goes into the financial administration and it comes back, you don't have to punch in. Because they could not pay me for the amount of time that I was working there. I wasn't working for time. I was working because I need to work the way I do. I go to Osho in Pune. I said, I got this job. I worked so hard to get it. I'm not a doctor, I have my own ward, and I can't work the way I want to work. And his main point was, there are certain things in your life that you can't compromise. And then I thought, okay. He said, he didn't mean not compromise, like if it's red light or green light, you decide I want to go against the red light. That's no, that's everyday thing. But somewhere deep down inside of you, you know it's wrong. And you can't compromise that. And then he went further and he said, you have to be willing to die for that position. And I thought, oh man, he's not playing around. He's serious, you know. If somewhere inside of me it feels off, it feels wrong, I have to... can't abandon that and do it anyway. In your case, it's different. You need it for survival. You know, you need it for your work. I would try, in whatever way I could, to create the situation you want. I know it's from top to bottom, but there's still people behind it, you know? And it's not what you do, it's how you do it. And how you do it, you can say, well, I'm just going to come in here, do my job, and leave. I'm going to come in here and create what I want. I'm in jail. And the only way to get to the farm was to work in the farms. So every day, I'm working in a farm. We have all these boots and we're shoveling cow shit. We jump in a wagon with these boots, and once you jump in, you can't get out because all the shit is just, you're stuck there. It was the worst job I ever had in my life. There was shit everywhere. And then we'd be four of us in this wagon. And then I decided, hey, listen, if we keep shoveling this way, we'll end up looking like Quasimodo, you know, with one big hump. So we made a deal. First this way, and then this way. It was the worst job possible, but I loved it because we were outside of the jail, and we were all laughing. It was the most ridiculous thing. So we turned a horrible situation into something, all right, this way and this way. And what am I trying to say? The situation does not determine who you are. You're always in charge of the situation. Maybe you have to do the job not the way you like to because you need the money, you know. But be in charge. Tell your boss, hey, listen, let's have a cup of coffee. You're so stiff, you know? You're always talking down to me. You know, I'm a human being, you know? Let's make this work nicer for the two of us. You know, there's possibilities. And I know you're so, such a beautiful woman. I think you could warm his heart and say, you don't have to call him a pig, but you can say, hey, listen, change, you know? Treat me better so that I can feel more happy with you. There's possibilities. I don't think you've exhausted them yet.
this way, that way, that way. There are many ways.
My psychologist will give you another viewpoint.
Well, the other viewpoint is that you can focus on that you have to work in order to make money. That's one. You can say, this is no doubt, that's just what you have to do. What can I do out of it? And then you look at, it becomes more a challenge, how can you make your work in a way that it turns you on? Because when it turns you on, it will turn other people on. People around you, they will respond. Because if you start to radiate that you're contented, that you're excited, that you're happy, that you do things with excellence and with quality, people will start to appreciate. You give what you want them to give to you. If you start to come with support, with excellence, with good quality, with an open heart, they will start to pick that up. Maybe it takes a while till they can immediately respond. But in that way, you can do something. You have possibilities. And maybe you try that way, it doesn't work. Maybe you do that way. But if you make yourself happy with the way you do the things, you know, you don't judge anymore, I just do this stupid work. No, make it really beautiful so that you are satisfied. If you're satisfied, there will come a response. You mentioned the law of attraction. It's a law of attraction, but you give it. What you want, give it. You want caring, give caring. You want fun, give fun. You want support, give support. Then it can come back to you. And it becomes very exciting. Mm-hmm. So I see it more like a meditation. To work there.
Yes, about love. And when I first started to do meditations, I understood meditations were done so that you can get enlightened. There was a goal. You just don't meditate forever. There's a goal. So I understood from what I could read that there's this energy that goes up and down your spine that's called Kundalini. And then there's this seventh chakra that if it opens up, you know, the energy flies out. And if it's your third eye, then this energy opens up. And for years I was searching for, waiting for this energy to happen. And then I understood that I was looking in the wrong place. I understood that all these energy points, seventh chakra, sixth chakra, this chakra, heart chakra, sex chakra, all these chakras for me are now light bulbs, and the battery is the heart. I thought this was complete by itself, or this was complete by itself, or the Kundalini is complete. Then I realized when my heart is open, that's the battery. Then all the light bulbs go on. When my heart is closed, the light bulbs don't go on. The Kundalini doesn't rise. And that was a big discovery for me, because I was really waiting. I was waiting to see. I was waiting for this one. And all these stories I've been told. And then I got it. These are just energy points opening. I call them light bulbs. Big light bulb. Light bulb. But the heart is the battery. When the heart is open, all the light bulbs go on. And the electric magnetic vibration of the heart is thousands of times greater than the mind. You could walk into a football stadium and you could stand there and open your heart and say, I give you all blessings.
Nobody might not understand it, but you're sending out your vibrations. You know, it's heart energy, love energy. And I love it as this emotional center is the heart. And I call it a good feeling. If you can feel the love in your heart, I was practicing, where is my heart? And I thought, is it in the center? I was a little bit off to this side. And how deep is it? And how big is it? And I got really into a really big story where my heart was. And then I got it. Every time I expand my chest, I pretend that's my heart. Then I wasn't confused anymore where my heart was. That's my heart. Rather than it's somewhere in between here and there and around here, you know. And there's a technique, it's from heart math, heart mathematics. Think of a loving situation, recall that loving situation, and then take that loving feeling into your heart and expand. Loving situation, pizza, smile. Get that good feeling? And in heart math, they say to make decisions from your heart, not from your mind. So, if I'm working with someone, the answer from my heart is, what's the best solution for me, and what's the best solution for the other? What's good for me, and what's good for the other? This is heart position. If you think you're listening to your heart, and you're with the other, and the answer comes, kill the motherfucker, that's not your heart, that's your brain. Okay? Now you understand the difference. The heart is always positive, and it's always in its your interest to keep beating and keep promoting the next moment. So it comes from the heart. When you're born, the first thing that develops is your heart, not your brain. That's later. Your heart is first. So trust your heart. That's the source of love. A heart attack, you can see that it's just the opposite of what you need. I have an 8-year-old son. He came to visit me from Brazil, and he was leaving. And I said to him, Rishi, I'm very proud of him. So let's have a photo so that we can have it for the future, the two of us. He's 8 years old, and he turns around and he looks at me and he says, no. My mind says, well, he's an adult, you know, he's 8 years old, and he has a right to say no. And if I'm going to be a good daddy, I have to be understanding. And I turned around and I said, what? No. I give you ice cream. I give you an iPad. I give you cookies. I take you everywhere you want. I always say yes to you. And I ask you for one time to take a photo with me, and you say no. And I said, and you hurt me, and I don't like it. I gave him what I was feeling. And he looked at me and he started to cry. So then I grabbed, and we both were just crying, you know. And my heart was there, and I felt, you know, how to be an ideal parent, you know. Do I swallow and say, I can't tell him, he pissed me off? And I thought, why not? I said, you hurt me, you pissed me off. And I was really upset with her. And he said, we should correct. And I realized, this is not an adult. This is not an encounter group. This is my son. And we both started to cry. That's love. To share everything. And he could feel that. And yeah, we have to pay a price for love. If you're nice, you get rewarded. If you're not nice, you get punished. You know, it's ridiculous things. your behavior can always be questioned. You can always do it better. Your behavior, the way you act, that's always changing. One moment you do it right. Rishi, you're beautiful. Rishi, you pissed me off. You know, behavior can always change. In your heart, that's not changing. That's constant. In your heart, you're perfect. Your behavior is strange. But in your heart, you're perfect. And owning that is part of being a lovable human being. In my heart, I am perfect. That's a big pill to swallow, if you can own that. Let's practice. Everybody stand up. In my heart, I am perfect. It might sound strange, but test it out. Everybody up. In my heart, I am perfect. This is the summary. I need love, not pain. It makes sense. It makes sense. Nobody wants to be suffering, you know? You need love. It makes you grow and everything. Suffering, oh, wow, 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 you don't want that. I need love, not pain. Record that. Make it a permanent thing. If you're getting hurt, you can tell the person, it's enough. I don't need this. I move, you know? React to someone else. I'm out at your garbage can. You need love. That nourishes you. It makes you healthy. Next one. This is brainwashing. My parents.
I forgive my parents.
For not being perfect. That was the next one, right? Yeah. One day, well, some of you are parents already, but you will appreciate this. Your kids will be saying, I forgive my parents for not being perfect. As children, we have this image that they're like God, and they always do things right, you know, and sometimes they miss. And it's what primal scream is about. Mommy, mommy, come back, you know, don't leave you. And then the next one.
I forgive myself.
That was the big one. It's yourself. I forgive myself. And after that, final one. Yes, that's going home. In my heart, I'm perfect. Remember your behavior. There's something different. You act strange. You act very strange. You need love and you smack people. I mean, you're strange. Inside, you're perfect. In my heart, I am perfect. Not in my heart, I am a resentment. Or in my heart, there's no forgiveness. Or in my heart, there's, it's not what it's about. You know? And you have to own this. Own it. I need love, not pain. I forgive my parents for not being perfect. I forgive myself for not being perfect. In my heart, I am perfect. Don't ever forget this. Stamp it in your brain. It's good stuff for you to live your life.
Are there any final questions? Because we have to have 5 minutes. About anything? Yes.
In my family, there's a strong point about resentment between my sister and my brother. Can you do anything about it or just leave it as it is?
Say again.
In my family, between my brother and my sister, is a big case of resentment.
Yeah.
And can I do anything about it or just leave it as it is? My sister is blaming my brother for having done something to our mother, and she cannot believe me. And I can feel her pain. But she said, I can't do anything about it. And
in a controlled situation like this, we could do something about it, but back home, it's... I get people saying, listen, my brother or my sister, they're an alcoholic or they're into drugs and I can't do anything about it. What do you think I should do? And my answer is, you don't have to be a therapist, you know, to share what's happening inside of you that is hurting you, it's destroying you, it upsets you, you know. Rather than to say nothing, you know. And I feel that you love them, therefore you care. Don't give up. Don't give up. Say, listen. Sit down separately. Say, listen, I'm hurt because I see how you don't open up and communicate. And it's not that it's the right way of doing it. It's you saying, hey, I love you. You're my brother. You're my sister. And I want you to come together, you know? And even say, do it for you if you can't do it for them, for each other. Don't give up. You don't need a therapist, man. Somebody's saying they have an alcoholic brother and they don't know what to do. I said, beg them to come to the Human University so that they can make a step. It doesn't matter how they get there, and then we can do some work. What I'm saying to you, don't give up and say, nothing can be done. You know, there are unique relationships you have. You have relationships with all the men in the world, but this is unique, your brother and your sister. Keep trying. Say, hey, listen, I want you to live together happily, not reacting to your mother and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, do that. Don't give up. Lay your trip. I want you to be happy. You're my brother, you're my sister, and I want you to come together and be friends. You know? The fact that they know you care, that'll help. Rather than, well, it's over here and I can't do anything about it. Don't give up, man.
Sometimes it helps to explain what resentment is. Resentment is like, if I am resenting somebody else, I am having the bad feelings. I am punishing myself. But somewhere in our minds, we think we punish the other, but actually you punish yourself. And sometimes that helps to, you know, explain that they can see that actually you are cutting yourself off. You know, you hold on to the anger, to the hate, to the rage, to the negative feelings inside of you. And that's not good for the organism. And that sometimes helps, but you need to be patient also. But keep, you know, if you care, that's enough. Don't give up on that. You see that the situation is not complete. You keep trying. Okay, so we would like that we finish this darshan by you going to each other, say to each other, love is always the answer, and then hug.
And then it's finished.
And then it's finished.
Love is always the answer. It's true, and you know it's true.
They all have a common sense.